Welcome to debate number 16. I'm Corinna from CADUS. CADUS is an independent humanitarian aid organization. It's currently our biggest project, we're running a field hospital in northeast Syria. Besides from offering direct help, we are also active in innovation in humanitarian aid. That usually takes place at our crisis response makerspace in Berlin, which you can see hopefully in the background now. The debate series started in the Makerspace, and thanks to the CCC Video Operations Center, it is now online. You at home can send us questions and participate in the discussion via the chat that you can find directly in the streaming site or on our website cados.org/debate. And I'm quite excited that today's debate literally goes around the globe and we are visiting Brazil. I'm speaking to Ricardo Ruiz Freire from the Global Innovation Gathering, in short called GIG, about making in times of COVID-19. We both already know each other from GIG, and we will speak more about what that actually is in a bit. But first of all, let me introduce Ricardo properly. So he describes himself as a vegetation enthusiast and has been part of numerous projects. For example, he is co-founder and designer of Tres Ecologias, an IT consulting firm for the environment, education and culture, and also a co-founder of the Centro Institute for Research in Media and Cultural and Technology. So the list of what he has studied is nearly equally as long as the projects that he does. And among others, he holds an MA in Local Sustainable Development Management, and he is also currently a researcher at, watch out, long name, the Productive Infrastructure and Logistics for Sustainable Local Development Studies Group at the University of Pernambuco. So, Ricardo, a very warm welcome, and really nice to see you again.
Thank you, Corinna.
I'm not sure if you actually know this, but Brazil has been quite present lately, also in the German media. There have been many reports about the severe situation regarding the pandemic. Just today, I got from the news that so far more than 123,000 people died from COVID-19, and there are about 40,000 new infections per day. President Bolsonaro is in the critique for downplaying the severity of the situation, or even for using it for his own agenda. At the same time, he still has lots of support among voters. And just as in other places too, also in Brazil, groups of people who have already been disadvantaged before the pandemic are also in a really tough position now. But as I know from you, Ricardo, and from our friends at the GIG Network, people are also getting organized and helping themselves. So I'm handing over to you now, Ricardo. Please tell us about what is happening in your place in Brazil.
Thank you very much, Corinna. Thank you very much, you all. Thank you very much, people from CADUS, for inviting me to be part of the debate. I will start to show you a little bit the work we've been doing with Casa Criatura. And Casa Criatura is an innovation hub in the city of Olinda, that is in northeastern Brazil. The city of Olinda is very well known for its cultural practices. So you see on your left a picture of the carnival, and the carnival is quite famous in Olinda, and it runs all around the streets, and it's an old heritage site, not just because of its buildings, but also because of the cultural production of it, no matter if craft is work or music or different cultural traditions based in Afro-Brazilian traditions. Olinda and Recife, as you see in the picture from the bottom on your right, they are separated by a river, and On the horizon line, you see the city of Recife with big buildings and is the capital of the state. And just across the beach, you see the city of Olinda. These both cities during the colonial time have been fighting to get control of the colonization process between Portuguese and Dutch, but at some point, with so many wars and the colonizers leaving the city from times to times, Olinda became a very known place for resistance in Brazil, because most of its population are black people mixed with indigenous people. Despite of this cultural heritage and lively livelihood, Olinda has also a lot of problems because it has one of the worst ages on the country. So, let's come back here. So this is the scenario of where we are working on. These are the fellows from Casa Criatura, and Casa Criatura is an innovation hub just like many innovation hubs around the globe. And before the pandemic, it used to have some restaurants and cafes, some meetings and discussion panels, music presentation and things like this, but also a makerspace with 3D printers and a small laser cutter. And then, in beginning of January this year, the famous year of 2020, as part of a global innovation gathering plan, Casa Criatura started to work with one of the projects of GIG. And what is GIG? GIG is a group of innovators from all around the globe, and it's also an NGO based in Berlin, but with the associates from different countries, and if I'm not wrong, it's more than 550 countries, the members from Global Innovation Gathering. The members goes from working from things from Defy Hate projects online to peace hack camps in Colombia or South Sudan. We also run a project called I4 Policies that discuss the way people can intervene in Pan-African political scenario, and some other projects. But the project we started to work in Casa Criatura, it's called Carryables. And Carryables is a project, it's a international consortium with different European institutions, but with labs running methodologies all around the globe on how can we use digital production to better care of ourselves and of our neighbors. And before the pandemic, this was very centric in people with disabilities, the pandemic brings some new perspective to the project. On the left side of your picture, of your screen, you can see people developing a stadiometer during one of the workshops. So Carryables is also a good website where you can have many different things to download and print to your community and to help others and to care better for ourselves. But with the pandemic, we, as many other makerspaces around the globe, start to develop face shields. And with the support of Carryables, Mozilla Foundation, and also from CADUS, we could start donating these face shields to different institutions, no matter if health authorities. So in the picture on your right, in the bottom, these two girls, they are from the health secretary of Olinda. And the doctors on the top, they are from the city of Recife, also from a public hospital. So we donated in total around 5,000 face shields. And the one in your left is very special, but because this one This was the donation for the health authorities for the indigenous communities in the country. We could donate some face shields to the districts of Pernambuco and Potiguar, but you can imagine that we have many indigenous health districts in Brazil. So the one I told you is just this small one here and here. This was the district that we could manage to donate it. And even though we tried to make a bigger donation to the national organization that takes care of the indigenous health sector, they said they were not able to get the donation and to do quite the logistics to distribute it very well because they already distributed some face shields. But we also need to remember, just like Corina said, when we talk about today's Brazil executive power, it's a military government elected by the people. So, in a way, we are still trying to figure out how can we reach more indigenous community with better support. We also developed a different model of aerosol box that the ones that have been developed around the globe, especially the one from Hong Kong, that is quite famous in the makerspace. And the problem with that aerosol box is in the corner of it, it's exactly where the doctor looks to the patient. So it was not very good to look into the intubation process. So we worked together with two different medical hospitals and we could design this model that is very light because it's using acetate, I think it's the name in English. And it also has some support for hands for not spreading out the gotículas. Oh God. And there's also support from Mozilla Foundation and it's available online on Welder so everyone can download it and use it. And we had also a special look to the what we call it the Nemuni. The Nemuni is the Latin word for the people that are part of the comuna, the people that are part of the commune, of the citizen, and the immune. The ones that are not part of the comuna, the ones that friends of the kings, the ones that don't need to pay taxes, the ones that don't they are part of the noble, those are the immunes. So we decide to design for the demuni, the ones that will not be able to get the vaccine so fast. Especially if you go to the peripheries of the globe, this vaccine will take some time to reach there. And how can we also take care of the population and take care of ourselves? So basically, Corina, this is the work we've been doing in Brazil. You have some reference in here in these three websites where you can have more information about the work I talk it here tonight, and I think that's it for now. You can contact me on the email, Twitter, please. I don't have Instagram and the web blog. So back to you, Corina.
I was wondering though, so how's Casa Criatura in general doing now? Because you said that before you have you had a cafe open and a lot of public space, and isn't it that the income for such a place also comes through a cafe? Is it still open or did you have to close it? And how's the financial situation at the moment?
Yeah, thanks for the question. We had to close the cafe and the restaurant during the time. Now the situation in Brazil is quite crazy because sometimes it looks like it doesn't have a pandemic running around the globe. You can, like now in Brazil, it's around 3:30, and in about 15 minutes, maybe you will start to hear some noises in front of my house because people are heading to the park so they can exercise themselves, but most of people are not using masks. And I had to travel last week to go to the countryside to solve some personal situation. And in some cities on the countryside, people are not using masks at all, and people are on bars and on the streets. So, in a way, Brazil is such a big country, and when you start a national security law saying everyone must stay home, you don't take in perspective that many cities in Brazil, you take 5, 7, 8 days to arrive, depending on the transport you are using. You can take even longer. So in a way, the lockdown in the countryside, it happened too early, and people stayed at home for longer with no cases in any cities. And as soon as cases were running low in the capitals, government started to open one or another city, and at some point, cities in the countryside decide to open themselves again, and then the coronavirus started to spread on the countryside. So the situation, it looks like a wave, you know, from the capitals to the countryside, and to some places that are very far away from some central spots, you know, some central cities with airports and things like this. So this is what is happening now. It's a mixture of people using and not using masks, believing and not believing, but the commerce is already opening again, and we open part of the restaurant. We mix it, the restaurant with the bar, with the cafe. And now it's just one thing in the front of the Casa Criatura where people can arrive and take away some food. You have just one or two tables in the front. People can order something, but it's not like just like before. You have maybe someone one day and someone the other day. So we decide to focus a little bit more on local production, just like you said. So these hats that we develop for the population, in a way it's helping us, and we also selling the face shields, because most of the donation do not reach all the health sector with the speed it is necessary. So we were selling it for 3 euros. So in a way we change it for a more cultural entertainment business to a more local production lab.
Great, so you are basically all the Casa creatures still able to survive. Well, how? But you, I saw on the website that you are also doing the plans for the face shields as open source. Is that correct? That if people wanted, they could produce them themselves according to your plans too?
Yes, the face shield, the aerosol box, and the hats, the turban, it's all online on welder.app. We think there's no other sense for local production if not with open source modules, you know. You can't imagine local development without open source models for printing or for developing, or even without open source software. So in a way, We use the products from the community as well, so it's more than our responsibility to share it back. And despite of that, especially because it's medicine, it's about people's health, we believe it's extremely important to have all the knowledge in science, all the knowledge in products to be open, all the knowledge in the pharmaceuticals to be open and to be free and available for everyone. Especially if you go to the pharmaceuticals and patents, most of it or a lot of it come from plants, and those plants are parts of nature and we are part of nature. So it makes no sense at all to have these proper medicines. You know, we are talking about human's health.
How is it in general, actually, the access to medical care and to medication? Is it that usually mostly all people in Brazil can access it if they need it, or is there really big differences? Can you say anything about that?
Yes. There are huge gaps. You know, there are huge financial, social assistance care. There are huge gaps in Brazilian society, and just like many societies around the globe. And there's some interesting case that I've been heard. So there's a friend, she's studying medicine in the south of the country, and her mother, she's also worked in the Secretary of Health of the small city where they live. And she was telling us that in the local hospital, they just have one specific medicine, and the doctor should prescribe this medicine for everything. So no matter your problem, if you reach to the public hospital, they will prescribe you the same medicine. It looks insane, but yes, it happens. And you also have some gaps. For example, what is the huge problem with indigenous communities? It's when you are indigenous in Brazil, so, and you can auto-declare what you are in Brazil. So you, Corinne, you can auto-declare you are black. Because of this history of 300 years of raping in Brazil, you cannot say the color of the mother or the color of the grandmother of that person. So you are the only one who can say where you are from. So when you are indigenous and you are out of your territory, you don't have documents. So you cannot go to public hospitals, you cannot go even to private hospitals. Because you if you are indigenous in Brazil, you are the nation is your tutor, something like that. So one of the big gaps which is with indigenous in the peripheries of the big cities. So when you watch into the presentation that I showed you, and I'll come back to the specific slide where I talk about it. Let me see. Okay, I will not trust in computers. So if you look into the Brazilian territory, and if you look the indigenous community, you have a lot of indigenous communities near big capitals, and you have a lot of indigenous people that leave your community to go into these big capitals to work, just like everyone else in the world. And once they are there, they don't have access to anything. So this is the kind of gap we are talking about. You know, we are talking about of the gap of, for example, the peripheries of the big cities, or the Brazilian, the black Afro-Brazilian population that has a huge lack access to healthcare sector or to healthcare institutions. So the access for everything is very, very difficult for some part of the population, you know? And especially nowadays with pandemic and how the huge, oh, here it is. So just to inform, you know, so this is one capital, this is another capital, you know, this is another capital, this is another capital. Here, people don't believe you have some strong indigenous community around here, especially Guaranis, you know, this mix with Paraguay, Argentina, and Brazil. So those are some of the gaps that we have in Brazil to health access, you know, and the situation, it's especially the biggest problem now in the peripheries is population's hypertension, salt and sugar. That's like the most responsible for killing people in Brazil nowadays.
Yeah, that's the thing, you shouldn't forget over COVID-19 that there's also general a lot of illnesses that kill people if they have no access to medical care. We actually have a few questions in the chat which fit very well the topic we've just been talking about. So there's a one double question for you, Ricardo. Someone in the chat asks, should the state do more to protect indigenous people from COVID-19? And do you have any concrete suggestions what should happen?
All right, thank you very much for your question, and thank you everyone for all the questions. Should the state do more? This is a tricky question because the answer will never be yes or no. When you think about the state, you know, it's such a mix of things. So I will do a very classical example for myself. I've been involved in some cultural projects during the beginning of the 2000, part of the Brazilian Ministry of Culture on the time, under the Labor Administration. And we could develop a project that at some point become a national law regarding state supporting local cultural production all around the country. And it was a really nice project and it worked very, very well for 15 years. But after the end of the Labor administration, we could realize that we didn't look into the sustainability of the project. And this is a special thing. We thought on that time that the state with the big S would be responsible to support the cultural production of Brazil during the eternity. And this does not relate it with the way capital walks around the globe, and I'm not saying with judgment, oh, I think the state, I think the capital, I think the companies, but what we see are different configurations of power, no matter if the social software in the Chinese, you know, the Chinese social software to you evaluate your neighbor, or the way the city of Barcelona is trying to deal with their data, or the way people are pushing forward the capital industry because of the Black Lives Matters movement. So, what I think is that we really need to understand the indigenous needs first of everything, you know. So I don't think if I don't know if the state should do more, but nowadays the state is not helping, and this is the problem, you know. Once indigenous communities in Brazil, once traditional communities, and when we say traditional communities, it's all this mix of population that during the colonial times used to run away from the big capitals, big colonial capitals, and go further in the forest and mix with the local population. And when you think about Brazilian population, you should always think about this kind of miscegenity. Oh, difficult word. And we should always try to understand what are the real needs of these traditional communities, this mix of people that used to be fishermen, used to be Afro-Brazilian population, that Brazil had an independent republic during the colonial times that most of the world doesn't know nothing about it, not even the Brazilian population, that it was called Palmares. And here it was a symbol of rebellion, but people really doesn't understand it as another country that we had inside Brazil during the monarchic times. So this population are the main target of this executive power today, this state today. And no matter the legislation in a country like Brazil that had this kind of urbanization process, colonization process during the last 500 years or 300 years, no matter when you think about that, you do a legislation, and when the government changes, this legislation changes. So when you talk about state in Brazil, you are really talking about government, because the state changes in different governments. So maybe what can be interesting is how can we develop tools so indigenous communities, for example, the Tupinambás in the south of Bahia, how they can how can state, government, big industries, population can help the cocoa industry inside the indigenous population. They grow cocoa inside the forest. They have a really nice way to deal with the production, and they produce very few amounts of cocoa, and just they sell it to Switzerland. So how can you ignite different models that does not depend just on the state, and also does not depend on destroying local population? To put farming, cocoa farming around, you know? So I think this is the main question, and not the what the state should do. I think the state should help. I think big companies should help. Mining companies should help, because what is happening now, especially if you go to the here, if you go to this area, Alto Solimões and Vale do Javari, where it's having this mining problem in Brazil, and go there, indigenous people themselves, together with mixed population and big money and age turn, they are mining by themselves. And the kind of mining they are doing, I'm not saying it's less or more sustainable than the kind of mining Vale does. Vale is the biggest mining in Brazil, and probably someone that invests in the stock market invest in Vale. I'm not saying the way these indigenous people are mining are better or worse than the way Vale is mining, but they are illegal. They are illegally mining their own earth, you know? And this government said, yes, this is right. Indigenous populations should have the right to mine their lands. So what you see is a two radical spectrum where you think what a state could do and continue being tutor of responsible people around the globe, around the country, and what mining inside the indigenous community do, you know, people are allowed to mine inside the territory, No, they cannot do anything because the state is the tutor of them. You know? I think we should always avoid the situation of X or A, you know, black or white. It's not about that. And what can be concretely done? I think maybe to give more access to power, to knowledge, to this traditional, to this contemporary knowledge, to have some way of structuring society and way of compensating the problems we created around these 300 years. And if you look here, it's clearly the Brazilian colonization. You see where are the indigenous, you see where they are not. And they are not because they are killed, because they are mixed, because most of the indigenous girls have been raped for 300 years. And more than killing the indigenous population in Brazil, it's been a cultural killing. So you take this as part of your culture. Your culture is not that good. So what was the first great mission in Brazil? It was the Jesuits. You know, look, your culture is not that good. You can become my culture, you can become me. And then you look to tons, loads of Brazilian people, and to you that walk around indigenous communities and look someone in the city and said, look, you are Pataxó, you are Tupinambá, you are Kayapó. But people say, no, my father, my grandfather, he's from Italy, or he's from Portugal, or whatever, you know? So when you look at the policies in New Zealand on how to deal with the Maori population and how to deal with this just three generations that had arrived there and colonizing the Maoris. Come on, you know? So I think this is more concrete situations, how Chile deals with Mapuche population. Sorry. The way Mapuche population have their seat on the Congress, the way the political is oriented around Mapuche population in Chile is also an option, is also something we could look at, you know? And it's not just indigenous populations, it's the ones allowed to be raped, it's the ones allowed to get the virus. 40% more of the deaths in Brazil are from black population or poor population. 40% more, just like the United States is the same, and probably all around the globe. And now I was watching the news today, and now is Mumbai. You know, the virus got into the peripheries of Mumbai. And even more crazy to think about this virus is when it goes into this traditional community and it kills the elderly, no matter if an Afro-Brazilian fisherman, the drummer girls, or what traditional community we have in Brazil, and goes there and kill the elders, you kill the root of that population, and you keep the colonization process of killing the cultural heritage of the people. And this is what is happening in Brazil now, today. This is the situation we are facing.
Thank you, Ricardo. That was really a lot of information. Yeah, but that's in the end a lot of times an issue also in other places, which you have already mentioned. But the right of indigenous people to the country they're living on, and you mentioned the mining. And I actually also read something about mining in Brazil in the connection to the spread of COVID-19 to indigenous communities. So it's, yeah, I'm quite surprised, or not surprised, but it's really a shame that they're not allowed to mine on the indigenous land, when at the same time the Brazilian state or the governments give out mining claims, gold mining claims, to other companies, and then the problem is that the miners come into the indigenous areas and they transfer the virus to the indigenous areas like this. This is at least what I read. Maybe you have different information, but
no, this is also happening, you know, because it's huge. So you have this situation I told you is just like the Alto Solimões in Vale do Rio Javari. And but if you go to other, especially the how we call in English, the people that have no contact with other population, those are now getting contact with miners and not company miners. You can think about even illegal mining. Myself can go mining. It's quite easy to mine in Brazil. If you go to the forest, you have gold in many places, diamonds. So it's a mixture, you know, of big companies, small legal companies, big legal companies, small illegal population. It's everything. It's a gold race. And when you get the space in between the gold, then you have the farming. You know, the white spaces on the map. If you look on my screen again, and if you look at the white spaces on the map, this is where Amazon is burning. You know, if you look here, this is where Amazon is burning. So when it's not mining inside the forest, inside this indigenous landing, people are burning outside the indigenous landing to grow soya and to grow meat. It's no secret for anyone. If we eat meat, in a way we are part of it. Not just we, you know, if we are in 200 people here, but we are talking about billions of people eating meat every day. You know, there's one small city here, here in this red thing, it's called São Félix do Xingu. The municipality, the area of the municipality, I think it's the size of, I don't know, you know, like it's huge. It's one city the size of a country in Europe, and they have 2 billion cattle heads there. 2 billion. We are 200 million people in Brazil, but just in one city we have 2 billion cattle. So this is the thing. It's huge. Brazil is quite huge, you know. The situation here in the northeast is completely different from the situation in the south, and is completely different situation in the north. Especially because it's quite impossible to manage a country of this size with just one federal constitution. It's very difficult to have the same law here in the north and the same legislation here in the south. And this is what happens in Brazil. And this just don't work, you know. No matter if mining controlling, farming controlling, health disease controlling, we have a central power that takes decision for everything. And if you go by plane from here, that is the capital of Brazil, to here, it's like 6-7 hours. You know, I reach from Recife to Lisbon in 7 hours. And this central power takes care of everything. So, and then comes again, should the state do more? No, I think the state should be divided. You know, but this is the first federal crime in Brazil. I can be arrested for saying that. I will come back to the map, because then it's easier to explain. Oh no, I'm already on the map. Oh, nice. So, just like I said, I will start with my perspective on this connection, this communication. We've been walking for a while with indigenous community from this area that is called the first meters, you know, because they are the first one to meet the Europeans in the beginning of the 15th century. And in this region, we work with the Tupinambá community and a little bit with the Pataxó community that we have contact there as well. In this same state of Bahia, we have some nice connection also with another community here that is called Tumbalala. Actually, it's here. Because in these three communities, another two communities here from Pernambuco, so in this axe that you see here, we have some contacts because we've been working with radio production and the cinema production for, I don't know, maybe 10, 12 years now, around it, 8 to 12 years, I'm not sure. So basically, we used to go into these communities with an FM transmitter or with some other workshops using free media, free software media, and to develop some communication projects with these communities, you know. And after this workshop, we used to leave the FM transmitter there and leave it for a year. And through social networks, you know, this terrible WhatsApp groups or Facebook groups, we kept the contact with them to see, okay, will you keep the transmitter? We need to take it to another community. What are we going to do? Do you want to buy another one? We know people who sell and these things. And after some time, we start also to develop workshops to produce podcasts and also film and do some movie screening inside this community. So this is basically the community that we work more because we are friends, you know. I talk with Tupinam, with Jaborandi, one of friends, to stay at his home with my son because we want to travel these things. We are friends, we develop a friendship during the living, you know. And they have a huge struggle, especially here in Tupinambá, huge land struggle. They are trying to, how can I say, authorize their land. So they used to live there, and then someone arrived and said now there are laws on this land, and they are trying to get their land under these new laws for 350 years now. It's just a bureaucratic process, and so their chief is one of the most hated indigenous leader in Brazil that is called Cacique Babau, especially by the federal police and this new government. So the communication in this area of the northeast is quite easy, and the southeast as well, because indigenous communities call themselves parents, you know. And then you talk with someone and said, do you know someone in Minas Gerais state? Oh yes, I have a parent there. Oh, do you know someone? But when you cross this space, and this is more older than the colonization, this cross here, that is the drought area, you had some indigenous that before the colonization, the most of the Brazilian population that are the Tupis, they travel from here through the Amazon to here and through Paraná here, and then they start to go through the coast and populated the coast and managed to conquer the other indigenous communities in this land. So most of the Tupi language people, they came from this part here, and no one never lived here so much because this is so dry, you know. This is dry. If you have a nice place to live where it's a forest, why to live in the dry, you know. So to reach these communities is more difficult. We also work with in Xingu once, so we have contacts in Xingu. And Xingu is something incredible that just happened when the state tried to do something without listening to indigenous. At some point in the beginning of the 1950s, if I'm not wrong, people decide that, okay, let's solve the indigenous situation here in this state. Let's close a piece of land and bring all the indigenous communities together in that land. And this is Xingu. So in the beginning, you have a lot of problems. To be indigenous is not to be yourself. You have to be connected with your land, where the tree was, where you've been born and where people have been buried for long years. So it's not to change yourself. You also have problems with another indigenous community. Sometimes you get a big genocide, and we have something like 10 or 12 genocides inside this land when this happened. So yes, this is how people try to deal with indigenous population here. So it's more difficult to communicate with this area, but we can now communicate with someone from Manaus in the capital of Amazon State, and it's an NGO working with these indigenous people that are away from their village and are living in the city of Manaus, in the peripheries of the Manaus. So this is some of the community we can reach. We also have a kind of national group to deal with the indigenous community, a national NGO dealing with a lot of the indigenous communities, called it APIBI. But the pandemic make everything more difficult. They are not able to travel to the indigenous community, so they are not very aware what is happening everywhere. But you see, indigenous communities are everywhere. So you can talk with some of the communities, you cannot reach very well some other communities, you know. You have indigenous communities living just like the way people think, but you also have indigenous community in the coast. So this means that you have indigenous surfers, or, you know, indigenous cocoa producers and the things like this. So it's a mix of different things. You can reach some indigenous communities, and some indigenous communities are not that reachable. And the first question about the needs of these indigenous communities, it's also very interesting, because they are in need of everything, you know. So I think I can reply it with another question, is what do you have to support, and how can we make this reach some of these villages? I think it's the best way to understand it, you know, because it's you always should take away that vision of a place with a house of wood or a house of straw, you know. You have some communities like that, but we are talking a lot of different communities that live in houses, that live in like rural areas, that use clothes, that have internet connection, but that say they are not Brazilians. They are Cuiabás. They are whatever, you know. I'm not Brazilian. I'm Potiguar. And this is what we are talking about. So there are many necessities. How can we reach? What are the communities you want to reach, you know? And how can we help those communities, what you have to support?
If it is just maybe just talking about what is going on in the places, would that be of any help?
Boycott Brazilian meat.
All right.
Boycott Brazilian meat. Boycott Brazilian soy. Boycott Brazilian agri-industrial products. I think it's one huge step, you know. Boycott the European Union Mercosur deal, because it's, in a way, we need some external strong pressure in the pocket of the riches, you know. Also, in a more local level, maybe try and select some communities, reachable communities, and start a dialogue with these communities to see, look, I can support you with this and that, What do you think is useful, you know? Because in a way, everything will be useful, you know? So it depends on us to not pollute that much, you know, to not bring more virus, to all those things that we know. You know, how can we, what do we have to support? And what those communities are in need, you know, they are in need of territory. They are in need of basic health care, really basic health care. Some of the indigenous community, they are in need, but they are also in need to be listened. You know, they are also in need to be understood. Some people like to live naked. Some people like to live in clothes, and then this should be understood, you know. And maybe this is the point. What do you need? How, from the things I have to support, how can we understand your needs? You know, in the needs of land, in the need of healthcare, in the need of basic knowledge. You know, so. One of the things we've been discussing with people inside the Tupinambá land is the problem of privacy on web. You know, because they use these traditional tools to communicate, and the federal police want them arrested. So if they leave the territory, federal police can arrest them. If they are inside their territories, federal police cannot go inside. So, and those people use a normal WhatsApp group, you know. And use it to as activist tool, normal Facebook groups. So one of the things we are discussing now is how can we develop this project of bring the knowledge of these more security tools to communicate, more security tools for privacy, you know? And it's all parallels. Healthcare, land, communication, you know, all the education, and not this education from the 16th century, but you know, like digital education, how can you use these tools better, you know? So maybe we can try to offer, and this is really a nice thing. In a way, it's become a costume. No, not a costume, sorry, this is not the word in English. It's a tradition to change gifts with indigenous. And you know, I'm Brazilian, so I'm happy that I don't need to consider myself a white man. You know, I can consider myself what you call in Brazil pardo, mulato. Sometimes I consider myself black, I consider indigenous. You can do that, and this is quite nice. So all those, I lost here, but all those levels came together, you know. How can we support? So all right, the changing thing. So this tradition of come to the indigenous people and change gifts, it came from the Portuguese, and it's live until now. It's a tradition. And people like it. So maybe we can try to start with this tradition. Let's change gifts, you know? And maybe this is an interesting perspective, even in the storytelling of the thing, you know? Let's change gifts, you know? I have this to offer, and I want a music, or, you know, I want you to keep your language. Or whatever.
Yeah,
Crazy stuff.
there's really a lot of ways to keep working and a lot of good ideas there. That hour just went so quickly, but we are nearly at the end. Ricardo, thank you very much. I would like to ask you one last question. What are your plans and Casa Cria Tours plans in the close future? Do you have any projects coming up, or what will be your next steps? Can you say anything about that?
We are now starting to prepare a presentation on Kerry Abel's project because it's been the end of the consortium project, you know, the consortium contract of 2 years. So we are celebrating, in a way, the success of Kerry Abel. So we are preparing this exhibition in Casa Criatura, but also maybe in a public hospital where people are circulating much more than in Casa Criatura, or in one of these hospitals, school hospitals that we work at. So we are starting to thinking on that. How can we organize better that, you know, this presentation? And we will also try to keep going with the Kerry Abels project, you know. We think this is really interesting the way we could help more population, so we'll try to get more funds for work with Kerry Abels in a local scale, and also helping GIG to search for funds for Kerry Abels in a global scale, because just like we had some nice things happen in Brazil, we had some incredible things happening in Nepal. Also in Ghana, India, so Italy. So I think we want to focus, at least me and some others in Casa Criatura wants to focus a little bit more on digital making and healthcare, you know, because it's been quite intense, quite important, and it's, in a way, it's a life-changing work, you know. When we heard so many times that we are helping saving lives, and this is so nice to hear. You know, just like you said in the beginning, it's been 130,000 deaths, and we just could manage 5,000 face shields, but then it's 5,000 lives, you know, and this is quite life-changing. So this is something we really want to follow on. And thank you very much, Corina, and thank you, Carlos, for all the efforts you are doing to try to help our indigenous community here.
Of course. Ricardo, thank you very much, and really the best of luck to your projects and to the whole GIG and Caribous network. It's actually really great to be part of that, and well, I'm very much looking forward to also meet you again in the Caribous and GIG network. Thank you very much for being here today and for putting really a very sharp spotlight on the situation in Brazil for us, and also on the activities of the people who are getting active to help themselves. And I would also very
Thank you
much
very
like
much,
to
Corina.
thank the VOC technicians in the background who have been really working hard to make this happen, and thank you very much. Well, thanks to you all at home also for watching and for participating with questions. I'm sorry I couldn't take all of them into account. But yeah, thank you all very much, and see you next month at Carlos Debate. Goodbye.